We got to talk to Vinny. Vinny.
All right.
Where are you, Vinny?
I should be right here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Let's see. You're coming through 661. You're a Skype user.
Oh, yeah.
According to my my map here of which call. So welcome aboard, Vinny. Do you know anything about us?
Absolutely nothing.
And I do have a few details here on you. You are known as Mr. News. Why is that?
Because so often I continue to Mr. News.
You continue to what?
Mr. News.
You continue Mr. News.
Yeah. Haven't you ever missed the news before?
Ah, missed the news. So you missed the news, right? You missed the news. All right, got it. All right. You were born in the ominous year of 1984, the same year set out in Orwell's Masterpiece and the year of New Zealand's neoliberal economic reforms. I was in New Zealand in December 2007 for 3 weeks. That's my only time, so I know a bit of the country. I was in the upper island. We drove down that island. And Waikamata, the beach. I spent some time at...
No, I think you pronounced it correctly when you said Waikamata.
Wapabadapata or something. Wapamata. Anyways, what part of New Zealand do you live in?
I live in the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, the primate city in the sunny little slave South Pacific island nation. It's just somewhat fantastic.
All right. After working in the telecommunication industry, you quit when you noticed that when you lied to the customer, the company's profit margins went up. How'd that happen? What would you lie about?
You know, actually, that's not even true. I noticed that you could do it, and actually, the one time I did even do it, I didn't even wind up getting the money anyway. But I saw other people around me just kind of like manipulating and being deceptive and everything of that nature. So it wasn't that if I noticed that I lied that the company had grown more profitable. It was noticing that if anybody lied, the company grew more profitable.
All right. Unable to work or have an employer in the conventional sense, Vincent... Or Vinny went out with frustration at the mainstream media. You attacked it?
with a sledgehammer and a hedge trimmer.
And began to make his own news by interviewing the activists about real issues that truly affect New Zealand and the world. The idea is to get the activists who live and breathe the issues and are not bound by corporate or political parties to be the pundits and reporters and watchdogs on the multifaceted agendas of the global elite. Right here at home, he hopes to one day be part of an alternative media revolution that will replace the mainstream media, for they are no longer relevant. I agree with that. Now, we have an interesting background. My wife and myself, we're part of the elite, and then we created some new actions and new products, so then we moved into a new kind of elite. We offer a substance that replaces your cells called RNA drops. That's all I have to say about that. I'm not here to promote it against you or with you or around you. So is there something you would like to talk about that's on your mind today or of concern? What is the issue? If you were given the microphone, you're at the White House, and you had a chance to speak and draw attention to people, people's attention to something that's important, what would you do? What would you explain? What would you point to?
I would explain to people and point to scumbaggery. That which is the actions, motives, and portents of a scumbag. All right. So everybody must admit, there's an awful lot of bad things going down, isn't there? There's activists and whistleblowers getting attacked, imprisoned, murdered, so on and so forth. So much deception, so much corporatocracy, so much enslavement of everybody in pretty much every single conceivable way, from your health to your mind to your country to your general pieces of freedom on a piece of paper, which are only really backed up by violence at the end of the day, because what one is willing to commit to is the person who will win, is unfortunately the lesson of war and the lesson of history. And people, unfortunately, the problem with them is that they've been so poisoned and so dumbed down and so depressed by this terrible, terrible system that they choose to believe that they're not actually capable of doing anything about it, even when you look at history, and the only people that have ever made a difference, ever, in any way, shape, or form, have been really, really awesome individuals who stood up and believed in their own ability to expose scumbaggery and rid their people of it. And I think that's what I want everybody to understand, is that all you've got to do to justify your existence, to help every single person in this entire world with whatever is going good in their life, you must be prepared to endure and to expose scumbags and the various eclectic forms of scumbaggery. Even if they wind up turning their laser beams of scumbaggery production material onto you, or they might peel off your skin, such as the toxic, acidic nature of their scumbaggery, you must still endure it. Go through pain, trauma, suffering, all those good things that shape you into a character that is without breakability. If you won't break, if you won't wield the weapons that will protect you, then, mate, we have a real opportunity to make this world something better than what it is now, without being poisoned, without being lied to, without being divided, without being conquered, without being controlled, without being ruled, without being slaves. If you just believe in yourself and stop accepting that you're a slave and start rebelling, be exactly what the elite can see us as, revolting. Oh yes, I am a particularly revolting slave, I am. I don't like slavery, just in general, you know.
Right, so that's a general statement. Any particular advice on how to do and maintain those values you are expressing?
Well, first thing you've got to not do is ask for help. You start asking for help with what you wanted to achieve. As soon as somebody says, well, it's not my idea, it's not my responsibility, I don't really care, you get really discouraged and then you wind up doing nothing. So it's best not to ask for help in the first place and to just freaking help yourself. Whatever it is. You've got a talent, don't you? You've got a skill, you've got an interest, you've got something, anything. Anything is better than nothing, all right? Even manufacturing plutonium in your backyard, okay, is probably better than nothing, because you at least learn that radiation kills you before you die. And there's so many distractions in life, and I think we've become addicted to them. We've become addicted to drugs, alcohol, entertainment, sex, and stupidity. Mostly addicted to stupidity, I think. To actually think that stupidity is something that's cool. Oh, I'm being poisoned, isn't it funny? No, it's not funny, bro. It's poison, okay? Breathing the laughing gas and cackling yourself to death is not a healthy alternative to sanity. Okay? That's why I prefer to use coping mechanisms. Best coping mechanism to come up with is laughing. You'll either laugh or you cry, and I can assure you crying is far more depressing. Not quite as much. They're killing people in other countries that I've never met and don't actually have any emotional attachment to, but I've got enough empathy to actually feel it, so I cry. Oh. or you can crack a joke about it. For example, do you know on Valentine's Day in Iraq, you know what kind of flowers you get? Depleted geraniums.
But you know, Vinny, we offer, you bring me back to our product, we offer a product that once you ingest it, you do not get affected by radiation. And you also don't get affected by the negative news that might appear to be swamping over you. You actually get in a pretty happy state. And you also get a lot of energy. So I would always recommend our RNA drops to anybody. But I also am a thinker. Have you ever heard of Marshall McLuhan?
Marshall McLuhan?
Yeah. You have not heard of Marshall McLuhan?
I'm only 28 years old. There's a hell of a lot that I haven't heard of, if you'll forgive me.
All right. Well, Marshall McLuhan came up with some ideas different from Orwell. He purposely decided to present a different map of the present and the future, and he did this in the middle 20th century, to counter the effect of Orwell. He was equally independent, radical, and not a dupe of the mainstream media, but he coined the phrase and popularized the phrase media. His book was called Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man. And I use a lot of his thinking about the situation, and I would say that George Orwell described 1934. McLuhan went so far that Orwell was describing 1900. So I don't personally use Orwell as a guide to where we're at. Now, do you have any American writers like Noam Chomsky that are your favorite, or any New Zealand thinkers? Where's something we can see what's influencing you or what you use that I might be able to get a bead on to compare what our self-criticism would be of each other?
Look at it this way. If you can think of a name that I haven't interviewed, it's starting to become more and more difficult because I get really big guests and lots of them, lots of different ones. I don't usually repeat the schedule. I'm trying to get, like, as many new different ideas from named and unnamed researchers from around the world so that I can accumulate vast sums and libraries of knowledge for which to, you know, sift through, process, and come up with a sort of view of the world based upon as much possible information as conceivable. And I don't really know. This is the problem. Because there's so much knowledge out there, it's impossible to know everything. I think basically the best idea is just to figure out where you are at this particular point, figure out what you've got going for you and what you need to do about it. Because I'll tell you what, the universe and the entirety of its existence ain't your frickin' responsibility. You and your own life are your responsibility. And by extension, your children, extended family, friends, etc.
Listen to the Benny Eastwood Show, live from nuclear-free New Zealand, from the fabulous Fluoridated.
Okay, I just went to your website, and I'm looking at your list of interviews, and I see there's a general trend of writers in that, not all, but you see you have George Norrie, and a lot of the people you interview, like David Icke and us others. I was the one who did this first 30 years ago. What I would do is I would take fringe information, and I would not have a political point of view, and I'd present a whole range of my beginning sources were Mae Brussel, Dr. Peter Beter, Lyndon LaRouche, Sherman Skolnick, and Marshall McLuhan. And so I would present exposés of situations, and no one would know what political grouping or category I came from. And so I think I was the first to do that, and it looks like you're similar to that. You're presenting any kind of rebel or critic or innovator, and you're not favoring the left, right, or center. Am I correct in perceiving that?
Yeah, pretty much, because the left wing and the right wing are of the same vulture whose head is at the center that eats your eyes out when you're starving to death in the desert.
Yeah. Sean David Morton there. So you actually, G. Edward Griffin, You're interviewing Webster Tarpley. He started off working for Lyndon LaRouche. Did you know that?
No, but he was given his first radio show by Danny Romero at Republic Radio. Did you know that?
Yes. And Dr. Rima Libo visited our place in New York City. Libo visited our home in New York City 15 years ago.
I was on Dr. Rima's show not too long ago, but we're kind of trading a bit back and forth. We make each other laugh.
Right. Where is she based out of now? Do you know?
I think it's Chile.
Chile, really? You know, her boyfriend, husband, was the general that was made fun of in the movie. Did you know that particular movie about the scientist who looked, the Pentagon scientist who looked into the paranormal?
No.
Yeah, I forget. Stubble Street.
Stubblebine
is her husband. You could Google Stubblebine and see the movie.
Oh, I know that. I just don't know the movie name.
Right.
The Men Who Stared at
Goats.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So I take a different view than all these people. It can be very complex. It can be simple. But what happened is that as I did what you did, explored knowledge, I hung out with all the geniuses in different worlds, different areas, it actually evoked something called ION, which was not a channeled entity, but a force that communicates at
it's true. It's true that ions also repel morons.
Yeah, that's right. Now, do you know about ION? Did Matthew Hurtado tell you about them? It. ION.
Me and Matthew haven't met or spoke as yet. I mean, I think he had a show on American Freedom Radio at one point on Saturdays.
Yes.
I'm not sure if he's still doing it.
No, he's not. I don't think he is. He now has a book out. But I don't take a critical view of things anymore. I say we live in a post-information society. On many levels, there's nothing to be communicated anymore, and you're on your own. And now you can overlay and connect to other people and share perspectives, but being in the informing process has been seriously amputated by communication media that are taking on a reality of their own. This would popularly be known as the Matrix in some way. And I see myself working with Ian as post the Matrix. We're not... My wife and I are not in the Matrix anymore. So I'm not interested in people who are worrying about the Matrix, are fearing the Matrix, coming up with alternative views to the Matrix. I am not a critic, even though I can enjoy and speak various kinds of criticism. But I'm dealing with a post-information systems. Many people are looking for the cold fusion battery. Well, me and my associates have the cold fusion battery. Now, there's many people make that claim, but we actually have one. And it's a lot of interesting implications. And it's an issue of how to bring that forth. You would be familiar with that. You've interviewed enough people. If you had the cold fusion battery, free energy battery, you know, how would you release it? What would you do if you wanted to keep it?
I'd kill the person that came up with it, confiscate the technology, replicate it, and then use it secretly in underground military projects so that if you get caught with this technology, people won't even know that it exists and deny it and call whoever founded a crackpot.
Right, that you would do what the establishment would do.
Well, I'd be forced to do that by what the establishment would do because I plan to create such devices and get killed in the name of doing it.
You plan that. Well,
no, I just expect it to probably happen at some point, you know? I expect the worst and hope for the best, you know?
Okay.
Why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free?
Right. Well, so we're in that boat. We've got the technology, and we're trying to avoid being killed, and we're trying to figure out how to release it without being killed. That's the main point. And that's our problem right now.
I think government biowarfare won't give us the answer. Let's release it much like a virus. Okay? Computer virus.
Yeah.
That starts infecting people's computers all over the place with blueprints of this technology. And then once it's out, there's no need to kill nobody, is there? Because He's not the sole arbiter of the information.
That's true. And but some of the ways it's made requires a special formula that we usually seem to be the only ones who have the means to make it. And that's because we got non-physical or ion helping us. And that's a unique expression in the world today, is ion, the way it operates. But so you've made some general statements. Is there any particular things we can... Well, you're not worried about anything. You're not...
quite the contrary. I'm extraordinarily worried about everything. And it's because I'm extraordinarily worried about everything that I rely on a relentless sense of humor in order to prevent me from probably cutting my wrist in the bathroom this evening.
Yes. Now, I'm not
This is the problem that everybody has at some point in their life, is that stuff is really, really dark, man. It's actually quite harsh. And so if you don't have coping mechanisms, you're not going to survive it, really. And I think that laughter is greatly missing in the truth movement. I call my show The Lighter Side of Genocide. And it's true. Yeah. And it's not because we only look on the lighter side. It's that you've got to be able to see it whilst you're sticking your head right into the darkness and immersing yourself in it so that you can at least come back. Because there's so many of us in this movement that have looked into the darkness and we haven't come back. It's corrupted us. It's turned us into bad people, just like the people that we got into this movement to expose, the corrupt, the vile, the betrayers, the infiltrators.
That has happened so much, I personally don't use the terms dark and light or good and bad anymore. That's how I got past that issue of people getting lost. I agree that it would appear a lot of people got in trouble staring into the competition. But I don't look at that. I basically am blind. I rely on how I hear things, and that's only tentative. I like Captain Beefheart's phrase, I'm not really here, just hanging around for my friends. That's one of my positions, and it turns out my friend, Ion, is quite an imposing phenomenon. So... I don't think, personally, I don't consider it dark. No, not anymore. I don't consider it light.
So you don't consider, do you not believe that there's actual bad people out there doing bad things?
No, I don't. I don't believe there is. I do not think.
So you don't believe that the elite kidnapping 400,000 children in the U.S. that are never seen again, 100,000 in the U.K. that are ever seen again, that are killed and brutally tortured and raped is a bad thing?
No, I don't think that's a belief. A bad thing, because I don't believe that we die or that there is an ending. If these people are being killed, they're going into bliss, known as the guff, and having a pretty good time. And they actually, every death's a suicide is one of the principles I explore, thanks to Ion. Every death is a suicide. Now, if this looks like mindless attitude, I don't mind if it's perceived that way. But I certainly don't regard anything as a problem anymore. Nothing.
So if you break your leg, you don't regard it as a problem?
No, because with the RNA drops...
If there's a mountain lion chasing you, you trip and break your leg, and the mountain lion is nearly on you, you're not going to scream out in pain when it happens? You're not going to fear for your life when he's on you?
If I have the drops, they would help me diminish the pain. But I would consider that I deserved that. I had created a situation where I allowed that event to happen. And if I get chewed up, I know with the medical products we have that I can get these things fixed up really quickly if I survive.
So the drops will help you if you've had your head torn off by a mountain lion?
Yes, it actually will.
You're dead. Your head is separated from your body, and these drops are going to bring you back to life.
Right. Who's laughing there? Is that Neufeld?
Sorry, it's me. Wait, you can hear him?
Yes, that's okay, Dave. We have Dave Neufeld here. Yes.
I'm loving this conversation.
What?
Yeah, no, keep going. I'm loving this. I didn't realize I was on the air.
Yes, if my head got ripped off and there was someone else to put it on, put it back on, I think I could survive that with the products we have. In other words, I have
you
gone...
You want to do a test run?
What'd you say?
You want to do a test run and test that theory? Maybe we're going to get a volunteer from the audience.
I was like, if even my head was severed, that's right, just sprinkle it on the neck part and the thing, fuse it in, come back in 3 hours, you'll be amazed.
I would not like to test it personally, because I think that challenges...
Are you telling me that you don't have enough faith in your product?
No, Bob didn't say he wouldn't want to test it, so he wouldn't line himself up to do that test. But hypothetically, if he had to deal with that, if he survived it, the drops would be an option.
Yes, I think they'd be the best option.
And has it been done before?
No.
No. Why, you want to volunteer? No. That's your individual choice.
Yeah.
So you're promising something that's never been done and nobody will volunteer for it. Is that what I understand is going on?
I respect that, and I would not trust you to survive. I don't think you'd be able to handle it. I can't trust anybody. I can only trust myself, and I'm not in the mood.
Well, you need kind of experience. You need experience in these kind of matters. But the problem is it's difficult to experience more than once having your head torn off by a
I would only do it. I'd volunteer to my head torn off if my wife was nearby and she had all the medicines that she's capable of using besides her.
Not to mention to hold your hand and say, don't worry, Bob, we're dealing with this.
That's right. But I don't think she would do it. I'd have to convince her to do it.
Let's apply the salve. Yeah, let's put the salve on that little gas there. It'll clean it right up.
I don't think Dr. Dean would actually do it to me. I don't think I could get anybody to actually chop my head off. So,
hey, Vinny. Sorry, yeah. Bob. Let's just flip a little off. What you're talking about, just a few minutes ago, and Bob said, well, I see, as you talked about it, and then you moved into, I think, what you call the truth movement? Is that what younger people are kind of focusing their sense of the world's fucked, how do we change it kind of thing? And you said, as you immersed yourself in it, you found the same, you know, corruption and vanity and meanness and betrayal, all the stuff you said that was the very thing that supposedly the organization itself despised and were the bad qualities of human that created the shitty situation in the first place. Maybe?
Yes, basically. Are we going to ever expose our own scumbaggery? Okay, like if I do something bad to somebody, and nobody knows about it, and I can perfectly easily get away with it, am I going to come forward anyway and just tell people that I acted like a douchebag and I'm very, very sorry about it? Yes, I actually will, because I believe that unless you expose the scumbaggery within yourself, you'll wind up being taken over by it.
Yeah, but how about this? Remember in the Wild West, they'd say cheaters always win.
Yeah, cheaters do always win. But unfortunately, when you...
No, you always win a draw. Cheaters always win the gunfight. Oh, you're guaranteed to win. Yeah, cheaters. That's a powerful thing. Look at it in school, people. Oh, what? What?
Well, that actually brings me to another one of my important philosophies, is that in a rigged game, do you know how you win?
No.
You cheat.
How do you win? So you take on the same pattern that is what you feel is also an ailment
to
mankind?
No, the opposite. The opposite.
You cheat. Explain that a little clearer to me.
I'm cheating all the rules, okay? So look at it like this. What's the rule? You've got to really, really work hard in order to accomplish a lot of work, right? Wrong.
Okay.
Actually, you just got to work a little bit smarter. You've got to lie and you've got to cheat people in order to become successful and well known, so that even more people will trust you, so that you can scam them. Wrong. You've got to actually be honest and decent, credible, and really put the hard work in, so that you build a reputation that isn't built on sand, so that you can continue to get contributions from people who actually care about you and what it is that you do that you also really care about. You build everything from the ground up in exactly the opposite mode to everything the New World Order is doing. Use the exact same plan. They've got an incremental plan to take over absolutely everything. I've got an incremental plan to make everything free. You know, I'm just kind of like at stage one here, where I'm starting.
Dude, you're cool. check this out. Even what you're moting right now in 450 BC in Greece, they were saying the same. Plato and Socrates wanting to build utopia were almost expressing similar sentiments that you were. But, I mean, Bob, are we doomed to keep repeating this pattern? Because I agree with Vinny. Wouldn't it be nice if that pattern changed? But Bob's saying no. Wherever there's a bad, good, whatever you would call it, light, dark, whatever, would they fill each other's void like a vacuum is filled with air or something like that? Or am I wrong, Bob?
Yes. Wherever I am, everything is great.
Yeah. That's an important thing. Then what happens if it isn't great for other people, Bob? Well, that's their issue, I guess.
They're not paying attention. They're not recognizing the resource standing in front of them, that resource being me.
Yeah, but I remember you said a neat thing. How about this, Vinny? You might like this. I remember, you know, what Bob said years ago on CKLN. I remember he said... He goes, if I had to, Carolyn and I, we could live on welfare, and I could have a lot of free time, and I could study a huge amount of stuff, actually, in the nice chairs in the library, and I could make it work really well and be very productive.
No, I wouldn't do that anymore.
But that was your sentiment in the 80s.
Yep.
Or you express that as a potential sentiment, right? Bob, Bob doesn't necessarily hold on to anything. He makes observations and statements.
Yeah.
Do you believe in having a justice system?
No.
I do.
I do not believe in laws.
Yeah.
So if somebody kills somebody,
they shouldn't have a trial and have evidence presented and be punished for killing somebody unlawfully or anything like that. It should just be a free-for-all.
Vinny, yeah, I totally agree with you. That's what the world, when all these systems that are supposed to have justice are rigged because people think if they cheat, i.e. say someone like Hillary Clinton, she was told she should not be in about 70 or something when she was just practically interning to be a legal thing. She was already trying to fix evidence and conceal stuff and really, you know, go against proper procedure.
Yeah.
And the guy, he said, I wish I wrote in the record, I was going to say, this woman is unfit for public duty.
Yeah. See, this is the reason behind my two pieces of legislation that if I was Prime Minister of the world or El Presidente Satan, I would pass these two laws. Firstly, the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, so that if anybody who has been known to have committed scumbaggery would have all of that stuff suppressed, so everything...
Didn't Pol Pot say that before he killed about 200 hundreds of thousands of people?
I don't think he used the scumbaggery.
Who would want to be the judge of who's a scumbag?
Well, you'd have to have a shockingly large amount of evidence to convict somebody of being a scumbag. You'd have to have people who have documented evidence that they have lied openly, that things that they have said and or done have resulted in death, loss of personal property, defamation of character, murder.
Well, how would you do that? Do they have to have
a rather long rap sheet and clear evidence of zero rehabilitation despite any available
evidence? Yeah, aren't there already a litany of people with that in public office and it still hasn't changed?
This is precisely the reason, because those people in public office are exempt for the laws that they pass, telling everybody else that you can't do it, but they can. What I'm saying for is that that's a form of scumbaggery, applying laws to other people without them applying to you, and so therefore you should be arrested, held, and tried as a scumbag.
Yeah, but in the meantime, is there any bliss that you can find in this? Are a lot of modern people really beholden to whoever sort of runs the reins or holds the reins of the system? Is that what's going on?
I don't believe that we really even need people to be holding the reins, because he who holds the reins holds the chains. We're basically just slaves to the state at any one point, and statism is slavery in and of itself. And if anybody's in public office and they're actually using their role in public office for private gain, then they're certainly not in the role of public official anymore, and they shouldn't be allowed to be in there. I mean, I would think that it'd be much a better idea to have somebody in public office be in public office for the right reasons, meaning that there would be virtually no benefits from even doing said work, a thankless job that everybody hates you for and there's virtually no rewards for. So a job where you have to wear like a prison jumpsuit and a ball and chain, and they practically chain you to a desk in order to do the country's work for you. Those people who volunteer to serve everybody else as a servant without complaint, those people are honorable enough to do that for the greater good of their country and have nothing to gain for it themselves. I think that's kind of a much better system, one without reward, one without almost recognition, right? Because once you get rewards and once you get recognition, then all you're doing is accumulating power and control, and boom, you get psychopaths starting to come into it because that's the only thing that they crave. Anything
rule by appetite, that's what we're at.
Yeah, I mean, anything that gives you real power and real control, like a radio show, being a surgeon, or politician, police officers, and so on and so forth, they wind up getting infiltrated by psychopaths. Psychopaths only really comprise about 4% of the population, but they always wind up clustering into these particular types of fields because of the concentration of power and control at the very top. Now, if you're in a position like that, then you have a fiduciary responsibility, a diligence to the truth, a diligence of trust. That trust has been greatly violated because they've been given too much power and control, because it's all that they freaking crave.
Yeah, but Vinny, they don't care about the rules. They did well in the interview and charmed everyone and got the job, and now they can do their thing. So all these things and rules that they're breaching, but you know what I mean? They wouldn't give a shit. They would only care if they were busted and thrown in jail for it.
Exactly, which is why you need to bust them and throw them in jail.
Well, through what? The Hague? I mean, don't already countries launch lawsuits against whole other countries for war crimes, and some people go to the Hague and it spends a few years? What's that?
There's a private prosecution going on right now of a 33rd degree Freemason who is the leading coalition partner to the New Zealand government, named John Banks, who is being privately prosecuted by a man named Graham McCready, and the High Court has now just agreed to hear his case. And there was a politician last year as well who used workers and things like that from other countries to work on his houses in exchange for helping them with their immigration, and he went to jail as well. Having a whole bunch of high-class people being privately prosecuted by individuals who are taking personal responsibility to exposing the scumbaggery of one particular individual and winning because they've got the truth on their side and they won't give up. They won't flounder and say, oh, it doesn't matter or whatever, everything's up to everybody else. They go, no, I can solve this problem. I can actually stand up, do something right for a change, and bring some justice about in this world, because justice doesn't frickin' exist in nature. You ever see a lion get the crap beaten out of him by a bunch of gazelles because he ate one of their little babies? No, the other gazelles are too scared. They run away. Justice is a human thing. We wind up punishing people for things that they have done wrong, and it's an unnatural system. That is why man has to be focused and diligent and do what makes his own life dangerous in order to preserve it. That's why it is so valuable. That's why people pay for it in their blood.
I don't think I'd bother with anybody.
What's that?
I don't think I'd bother with anybody.
This is very common.
Vinny, no. You know what's interesting? That, remember, in the whole idea of the Antichrist is what you sort of said earlier, is where the individual feels powerless to do it. So when you express almost like the president isn't at the switchboard and is just a figure and has no power, what does that say for certain individuals? In some way, you really, it'd be better to focus some energy on carving out, you know, a world that I mean, you, by the sounds of the passion that you have, man, and your intellect and your literate capabilities, Nat, you know, and your desire to fight for justice and the things that you say are really on your mind, you know, you're still younger. You see, you can become a lawyer and get your lawyer's license or whatever, so you can start legally moving in, and then you can go in court and do your pitch for justice.
Why would I want to do that? Why would
well,
I
you seem to
that?
Express
why would
that
I
the,
go into a system?
You talked about taking people to court that you didn't like.
No,
so go.
The thing is, I'm a
What?
I'm a conduit. I'm a mediator.
Conduit. So yeah, you. Okay, I get it. Okay, okay. I was okay. Yeah, I thought you were
right.
But also, you're. Would you consider yourself a journalist?
Technically, I'm not trained as a journalist, but a friend of mine showed me the list of journalistic principles that you're supposed to adhere to, and this is only five.
What did they say? Mendicant in 19... Sorry, okay, I shouldn't keep...
Gaseous prose.
What?
Yeah, but...
I read it last week. It's a load of gaseous prose, but it's good. It's a clear focus. It's something that journalists can take on board if you can understand it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get Vinny to talk in another language. Let's get Vinny to talk in another language.
Yeah.
There's too much English going on here.
And it ensures integrity, credibility, honesty, and fact-checking, essentially, you know, treating people nicely, giving the story, whatever. And it turned out that I had adopted and was following every single one of those journalistic principles. Principles, mind you, which when you look at how the mainstream media uses journalism, are in the exact opposite in every single sense of the word. You look at these journalistic principles, you look what alleged journalists are doing, and you're like, it doesn't match up at all. And I was doing it by myself without even knowing what the principles were, because I just wasn't a lying douchebag, you know? It helps.
Well put. Exactly. If you're an honorable person, you don't need a contract.
Well, this is what they want you to believe. This is part of the you getting influenced by the powers that be. You know, they want you to be your own journalist, and when you come across the manifesto of what they want you to do, you've already created that within your space. You know, you've got your followers, you've got people listening, but really, it's just you yourself and I. You know.
Well, yeah, different media landscape. Now, what is 100 years ago? What some guy, what Mencken, there's this famous quote, and he said, the role of a journalist is to pervert the truth and curry favor with the powerful.
That's Mencken. That's H.O.
Mencken?
Yeah, Mencken, I think, said that.
Yeah. Obviously, that, you know.
I have no problem with what Vinny's saying, but it doesn't motivate me to do anything different from what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
Well, exactly, because you're already following the principles of a good, decent person who doesn't sell out for scumbaggery for love or money.
See, and that goes back to the Plato, because what you said at the start about people act honorable to get good reputations so they could link up with other people and exploit other people, and ultimately it's really just for their own, you know, whatever situation.
I run my show to allow myself to be exploited. It's kind of open slather. So I say to my listeners, okay, you want me to interview anybody? Just give me a name, okay? Give me a name, and I'll find that person. If you give me their email or Facebook or whatever, I'll invite them on the show for 2 hours. We have a conversation, and that's it. No prep, no nothing. You write on in there. Had people come on my show and just tell outrageous lies about themselves or whoever else. And I allow myself to be suckered like that just because I know for a fact that unless I allow myself to be open to that kind of criticism, that kind of position, that kind of like flag in the wind honesty, that I'll probably wind up becoming some form of dishonest douchebag who tries to control everything and make everything in the way that I want it to be. And I know the way that I want it to be is nothing like the way you want it to be or anybody else, which is why I don't want control over other people, which is why I don't want people to do what I tell them to do, which is why I don't...
Do you want control over scumbaggery?
No, I don't want control really of any kind of...
So your manifesto's mutating. Your manifesto's mutating a bit, or...
What?
So I thought you were really pissed off and wanted to take him to court.
You fucking skullduggery scumbag. We caught you in your own fucking bullshit.
What?
Where are you calling from? Are you in Christchurch? Is it Christchurch?
I get a mute. Robert will distract us all over the place.
What I'm saying is, I don't want control over other people because I don't like people having control over me. I just don't want to be attacked and frickin' ruthlessly killed and exploited by scumbags. That's all.
But you express that a lot. But you're to get how about this though, Bob? You're not going to get away from that as long as you keep expressing it and covering it. And if that's I don't know if that's what you do. Whereas Bob, so Bob would say he's ignoring it. In other words, yes, that stuff exists, and yes, what you're saying.
No, it doesn't exist, Dave.
There's
no skullduggery happening.
Yeah. Sure.
That there is no such thing as skullduggery.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, Bob, you better elaborate more because I ain't going to go. That's right, Bob.
Yeah, because that just sounds insane on its face.
You know what it is, Bob? But no, this is Bob. Hopefully, this is Bob's answer. He is not going to let that bug him. No, there is no skullduggery. No, Lee Harvey Oswald did shoot Kennedy.
Yahoo! Where's these little kids here?
Yeah! Okay.
Yeah, no,
you know what it is? It's like, I love you, Vinny, and I see myself in you, and a lot of humanity has been playing that way you're playing, and you know, and you care about justice and all that thing, and it's great. A lot of what you're expressing, it's awesome, and it's what is a great quality of mankind. I hope when you channel it all, because when you came on, man, you've got a real good oratory about you. You know, it's partially your accent, but it was more than that. Have you had any drink or two, or
actually, I have.
Yeah. Did that loosen up? To say, yeah, you seem loose. It's like I don't give a fuck. I'm ready to talk. I don't care who's on the line. I'm feeling it. It's great.
Yeah, you seem.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how I am all the time. I found it doesn't actually make too much of a difference, but it certainly makes it a lot more fun for me anyway. Even if it's a distorted perception of reality. To say that there is no scumbaggery, nothing bad or whatever, I just really, it's bullshit. Okay.
How about to focus on it then? How about not to see? How about to focus on it? What about that? Instead of saying not to say it doesn't exist.
Look. Okay.
Or,
again,
Bob, explain about it. Not know right.
Let's be here's why. If you don't focus on things and you don't do things, okay, how did the RNA drops get invented? Did they just magically appear out of the ether and plug themselves into bottles and give themselves a radio
show? Exactly what they did.
So you had no hand in it, Bob. You had no hand in it. You were never there. You never invented anything. You never did anything.
That's right. We never did anything. Now we're getting somewhere.
If there's no good or bad, then why are you choosing to do good?
The belief that
you can't do anything in this, and there's nothing wrong.
I'm gonna fucking mute Vinny. Vinny is out of control. Great.
Yeah.
No, Vinny, listen.
This is very important.
Okay, we're listening.
Really
we're listening.
To watch
yeah, we're listening. Let
you really
it,
need to watch.
Finish your paragraph, Vinny.
Okay, you really need to watch Mark Passio's presentation called New Age Bullshit.
I know Mark Passio. Now, that's a guy who deserves a good spanking, that guy.
Well,
professor of California.
He goes through and he explains all of these mentalities and things that really don't add up to anything. There's no evidence to back them whatsoever. There's no validity.
Taking I would agree
personal
with
responsibility,
him, but I actually did pull it
measuring
off.
The
That's
design.
The fucking thing. It's a goddamn fucking mystery.
Yeah,
I think we've reached his limit of acceptability. I think Vinny has got rules. Vinny, you got mental rules there. We actually did.
Having a brain is not the same thing as imposing rules on other people. Just look at the evidence and let the evidence take you where it is. There is the trivium, of course, where you can define what the who, the what, the when, the where, the why before you start asking how. Right? Then you've got your grammar, then you've got your logic, then you've got your time and space, and these are all verifiable, measurable things that you can in fact check up on in order to start thinking something with a level of validity. Whereas belief
of language
on the other
too.
Hand,
don't forget,
whereas belief
product
on the
of
other
language.
Hand, yeah. Believing something just because you want it to be true or disbelieving something just because you don't want it to be true doesn't mean that it is true or untrue if you don't have any backing evidence. To say that evil doesn't exist when we've got clear documentation, news stories coming out every day about it, and to say that it doesn't exist is an abdication of the acceptance that reality exists. To not accept that reality exists means no belief in good or evil. It means no belief in morality, no belief in ethics. But I find that a lot of people who actually enter into this type of mentality actually do have morals and do have ethics, ironically. And they say that they believe different, but they're actually good people down inside who really don't like seeing this thing happening and are actually not wanting to face it because it hurts them too much. Feel the pain. You need to feel the pain of reality in order to understand it. You need to get arrested. You need to get smashed in the face by cops. You need to get pepper sprayed. You need to have your business stolen. You need to have your house burned down by assassins. You need to have your car hijacked. You need to be have liquor spilled on you while a guy is trying to steal it off you with a knife. You need to have these terrible things happen to you to shock you out of this escapist realityism that we've got going on here.
You say you mean me or you or which
person? Yeah, you did. But you fucking you fucking scumbag.
That's skullduggery. You're evoking skullduggery yourself, but it's really good what you're saying, because I understand there's a lot of rules and there's a lot of control, which... I wanted to ask you about the Gnostic thing anyway. I wanted to just ask you, because what you're talking about there, a lot of that kind of guideline comes from Gnosticism.
Yeah, I talked to Jan Irvin a little bit about that. But I'm kind of like, again, despite the fact that I might be really, really, I don't know, vocal and passionate about my things, if somebody could present me with evidence that is 180 degree contrary and actually prove it that it exists, I abandon my beliefs on a dime.
We can do that. We can do that.
But if you talk to me in 6 months, you'll see a completely different person. I've got people coming up to me now, but Vinny, back and then you said this, this, and this. Ah, but since then I've learned this, this, and this. What you're talking about is what 6 months ago Vinny said. He was an idiot.
Well, how about this, Vinny? Imagine if you were on the drops and you shifted and you still had your character that you have and you shifted and suddenly everyone's like, he's in a whole different mood. So even if you were unemployed or employed or something, you still might be so much fun to be around that you never know what would happen. But not that you're not fun to be around now. I don't think your life is bleak, but I don't really know your situation.
Well, you know, there's bleakness and bright sides and stuff. Like, I'm getting married in January. I'm getting more hits to my website than ever before. I'm getting enough money to live off from donations from listeners. I'm capable of helping activists get on air that have never been on air before. People have been tortured by police in police cells, naked, bound and hogtied and beaten regularly on the hour and not given any food or water. And helping people with these really great pains and traumas in their life, just being able to express them and have somebody who actually gives a frack enough to sit there and record it and listen and make sure that it gets edited and uploaded after the interview, when nobody else in the entire media in this entire country would give them any platform of any kind for any length of time, I think I've actually saved quite a few lives. I've had emails sent to my producer from a listener who was going to commit suicide before she started listening to my broadcast, because I like to put a light spin on things. I don't take myself too seriously, and I try not to take what other people say about me personally, because that's the thing that'll really drive you mad and really start getting you all narcissistic and up and all, and thinking that your own ideas are really, really 100% the only correct truth is my correct truth. I think I'm probably wrong most of the time. The difference is I have the wisdom to realize that if I don't admit that I'm wrong in the face of available evidence, then I'm not only going to lead myself into trouble, I'll also lead other people into trouble, and I don't want to be responsible for hurting anybody.
Well, I think you'll be a good parent.
Because I didn't really have a whole lot of good parenting, and I think since the age of 14, I've really, really, really wanted kids, because I really want to be a dad, and it's been 7 years with Sarah. We've not conceived yet, and I don't know what the possibility of that is. You know, it's one of those things that really kind of grates on you, the desire that you have for so long in your life, and it comes around to the point where you, but who knows? Maybe it's the Fukushima radiation, maybe it's the chemtrails, maybe it's the fluoride.
Again,
the
you
water,
should maybe try the drops and the magnesium. And that, because the magnesium, which, you know, is a pretty essential building block, most of the magnesium that's commercially available is not really absorbable, and this stuff is. So you might investigate that. You haven't tried the RNA drops. You can get a free sample. I don't mean to sound like I'm hawking stuff, but just what you were saying is like, you know what, you might actually get something really positive out of it. And I think it sounds like you're open to positivity in your life, and you want that in your marriage that you're about to enter into. And are you going to be living in New Zealand?
Yeah. I'm going to be starting up a guerrilla media house. So as soon as I've gotten to the point where I'm getting enough of those regular contributions from listeners through the subscriber list, I'll be able to rent out a reasonably nice house with a couple of rooms. One room will be a guest bedroom for activists that are coming overseas that want to speak in Auckland but don't have enough money to, say, organize a hotel room for themselves. We'll pick them up at the airport, give them a bed and food and what have you, drive them to their speaking engagements. Also, we'll have a studio radio and video in there with a little pull-down green screen or blue screen or whatever. And so we'll have our activists come in studio, and they'll be getting interviewed, like, let's say, on the Vinnie Eastwood show. And at the same time, I'll be teaching them how to actually do all of this recording stuff and use all of those programs and edit and do all the same things that I can do in the course of the day, where I produce a two-hour radio show with a 90-minute video version of it, with just like the ads and music come off kind of thing. And if somebody's able to, inside of maybe 6-7 hours, roughly, it takes me to produce that little bit. If they can do that themselves, have the skills themselves, then they don't need me anymore. And that's actually my ideal world, and what I really want to do for people is give them the tools so that they don't need to be dependent on me or be dependent on anybody. And all it takes is a tiny little bit of training, maybe a little bit of equipment, and you're on your way. I don't want to have to control over you or anything. You're already doing a good job. You're already exposing copious quantities of criminality going through the legislation and what have you. All you need is some promotion of what it is that you're doing and on your way.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have obviously nice motivations, and that the characteristic too. I mean, what you're saying is great, and it sounds exciting what you're doing to setting up your radio station, and you're going to get a place where also you can have, you know, the guests stay and show them how to use that stuff. Is that also kind of miming to the whole shift with the computer and chip environment, where sort of everyone is generating material? And how does that, like, you know, shift news? The other thing too, Derek, Vinny, you've probably been following, is that and when you first came on, I immediately thought of it. I recently read a few articles about how a lot of journalists say, ever since the thing with the Snowden and the awareness of the surveillance, is if it wasn't happening, but now it's okay, officially is kind of thing, is that journalists now feel inhibited, and also do the whole thing with the Obama when the guy had the leak and they wanted to find out who
the guy. Well, that's because they've got something to lose. That's why I like. That's because journalists have got something to lose. That's why I like activists, because they've already lost everything.
Right, so they're not going to lose their career in a journalist and not get hired at the TV station because they don't cover the stories they want them to cover.
Exactly. Who better to be the world's reporters from now on, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and the key is, and with guys like you, is you find an audience too. Is to find, and you seem like the kind of guy that links up with a lot of people, and, you know, to keep the energy going so that you there's momentum and people involved in it. But I mean, the work that you're doing, if you're helping people that are being tortured in jails and countries where there's practically no one else on the planet, even they're just being ignored, and so if they're in a jail cell, they're probably glad that someone out there like you has the passion to do something about it. So I definitely salute you, brother.
Oh, you got to help people, eh? And it's because I'm a really damaged
man myself. Well, you have to help people.
Yeah, I think I have to. I've I've been treated really, really nastily throughout my life, but also been treated really well, where people gone out of their way to help me. In certain areas of my life, whenever I've been in crisis, somebody's there been to help me. And thus, in so doing, when I see other people in crisis, I want to be there to help them. It feels sort of like a moral obligation to me. So if I see activists who are showing me documentation of pedophile rings, for example, that are running through child and youth and family services here in New Zealand, and I hear recordings of their high upper management saying that we have at least 10% of our workers known pedophiles, and about 50% of them have wet dreams about the children. That kind of stuff gets out, and you see this person have his kid taken from him just for exposing this. You see him. You see these people held hostage, and the reason why they're held hostage is because they go to the mainstream media and they say, "Please help me. Please cover my case. It's really important. I've got the documents to prove it." Mainstream media goes, "Wow, that sounds like a really interesting story that would get me fired. No, thank you." And so I go in there, and I've got a whole bunch of really diverse listeners from all over the world. About 80% of my audience is between 40 and 65. So my average listener is actually twice my age.
You know why? Because they're literate. Because they're literate.
Yeah, you're probably quite right.
What's the demographic of your... Are they all in New Zealand, or is that in Australia as well?
I'm the first New Zealander in history to have an American-based talk radio show. I'm the first New Zealander in history to put well over 100 hours of activists' dialogue and talks on a website available for public consumption. I'm the highest-ranked YouTube channel that puts out news in New Zealand at the moment, even highly ranked, even more than doubly highly as ranked as the mainstream media YouTube variants in New Zealand, that the New Zealand Herald TV, I think, the New Zealand equivalent of the New York Times, for example. That's the second biggest after me.
It's a very popular subject in New Zealand, isn't it? That kind of family abuse kind of thing that you're talking about. I know that
it's global.
But it's
global.
But you know,
in smaller towns too.
America with the start of them, you know.
The only real
filtered in through all the way around the British Empire.
The first time I heard from it was from my... I've spoke to Bob about him before. He's a friend from New Zealand, and he mentioned this stuff, you know, in a hotel when we were just late at night talking and stuff, and he told me about his family and all the kind of strange things that have been going on, you know. He's in his 60s, 70s. He's a good guy, very, very rich. He lives in New Zealand, but that's why I wasn't surprised when you kind of said that stuff. So, but the thing is, as well, with this, what I've noticed, because I've been watching David Icke's show yesterday, you know, the new channel that he has.
Yeah.
And there's this danger, because you're talking about the school duggery, and what the danger is, I don't know, this is my just the first day of seeing it. You have these presenters come onto the show, because it's broadcast 24 hours a day, and then you have the broadcasters come on who are basically the same people who you're trying to help, and they're instantly the broadcasters. They have the power, and they're talking, and they're so well behaved and doing so good at it. It's just a complete turnaround. So I take my hat off to you, my friend. It's very, very good.
Well, and we had a success story as well. A woman named Pip Cunningham, she hadn't heard from her daughter that was in the system for years, since she was like 11 years old. And she got back in contact with her daughter for the first time in all those years, because she didn't even know whether or not she was alive. And this was because we went outside the office, the Manurewa SIFS office, where she was taken from it, and bullhorned them and told the truth for about a half an hour with myself and two other activists. I brought the megaphone along. I made them wear my camera rig. I've got a GoPro camera and a shoulder mount, so it films their face when they're speaking, when they're moving around and everything. So it's a completely detached camera, and I'd film them with another camera, so you can cut between the two angles. At the same time, you have them holding a wireless microphone to a 100-watt megaphone. The megaphones that the cops use are 25 5 watt. We've got 100 watt, and it has a quite a big range on it, and also a wireless microphone on their lapel that's connected to the camera so that you get high-def video from two camera angles. So if one's bum, you can go to the other. You've got high-def audio being recorded of them and high-volume megaphone going out there as well. And I produced those videos as best quality as I could and put them up online. And now a mother is now in contact with the daughter that she loves so much. And this is something that I strive to achieve, is to help people do for themselves, well, try to help people get what they can't get for themselves by themselves. You know, it's like, for me, somebody says, oh, thank you so much, Vinny, for giving me 2 hours on your radio show. I got my daughter back. And I go, do you know how much effort that was for me? It was nothing. It was 2 hours of my radio career. Do you know what you've had to go through? 3 years of not being able to see a child who you bore into this world, and you're going to come around just doing what should be done.
Have you got any other stories like that? You know, of people who've been part of your movement and they've got involved in your frequency, and what do you expect for these people? Because there's going to be more to come, isn't there? There's going to be more people coming into the loop, and then, you know, what do you hope the best for them? You don't, you know, because you're attracting this kind of skullduggery, so you've got content to do, but like, you know, you wouldn't wish that on yourself, you know.
I actually do wish it on myself, because if I don't suffer it, how can I fight it? If you don't know your enemy, how are you ever going to beat them? You know? I think we've all got to give up our creature comforts from time to time and be prepared to give and sacrifice of ourselves our comfort sometimes to just do what we feel is right. You know,
how do you juggle from your position of power to your homestead?
Well, because in my home, I don't have any power. The missus wears the pants.
Okay.
You know, asked and answered. Pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think this is a really important as well, is you've got to be prepared to, I don't know, give up a few things just in order to go along, to get along, at least in your home life. And it's the same with family. I mean, things that you have to deal with, the world doesn't have to be yours. There's certain, you can just tolerate a whole lot. That's what I've found in relationships. The first few years when you're growing, sometimes you might fight, sometimes you might not, but you learn to love each other and tolerate all those things that frequently effed you off to no end, until eventually you realize that they don't actually matter, and you've got time to focus on more important things, like, I don't know, stopping a band of ruthless criminal bankers from taking over the world and enslaving all of us.
Yeah, I think that's funny. It's serious business.
That's part of the deal. You get home and you rejoice. You have that high feeling of success. And that's something that will keep your relationship going for a long time, you know. But my danger is how do people switch off from that, you know? How can you go home without any of what's just happened?
Well, here's the two best pieces of advice from Jack Blood, talk radio show host for well over a decade. He's made a good go of it. And I asked him once, I said, Jack, you're an honest man. You're a decent person. You never screwed anybody over. He's like, yeah. I go, how do you do that? How do you become successful in your field and have fame and a lot of responsibility and everything and not turn into some form of dick? And he goes, well, it's two rules, okay? Firstly, drink. If I didn't drink, I would have gone completely insane. And second rule?
I've heard this so many times, yeah.
And the second rule? Take the money, all right? If you're not doing... No, seriously. If you're not doing anything bad, you're actually helping people and doing the right thing. And people come up and they say, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. Here's $20. And just take the money. For goodness sake, You're not using it to purchase depleted uranium to pepper it on Afghani children, are you, mate? No! Just take the money! For goodness sake! You're exposing scumbaggery! You're doing what's right! Don't stop accepting people's generosity just because you've got some kind of moral obligation against the banking system. The banking system will still frack you anyway, but you'll be a hell of a lot more kinged up and tooled to frack the bloody bankers if you've got a roof over your head, if you've got stable internet, if you have a computer that works so that you can keep working every single day at what it is that you are doing on the very kind benefit and generosity of people who wouldn't donate to you if they didn't believe in what it was that you were doing, something that you're not telling them or forcing them to do. Charity. Charity is dead now. It's freaking dead. Have you noticed? Because they've got all these non-governmental organizations, charitable organizations, you know, and all they do is wind up fulfilling UN Agenda 21 with everybody's money that they just beg for, you know. Give us some money. We're the Cancer Society. Really, you're the Cancer Society. You're supposed to be a society about curing cancer, right? Well, yes. Have you ever cured cancer? No. How long have you been around? 40 years? So if I was a builder, and I told you I was a builder, and I've been around for 40 years and never built a fucking thing, you'd call me full of shit.
Well, you called the right place.
Society.
Yeah,
no,
we're going to help Finney Jones out. We're going to help Finney Jones.
But check this out. So you're talking about the scam of the whole... Are you that familiar with the work of Carolyn and Bob?
Carolyn and Bob? Not overly, no. I mean, not until on here.
Well,
because we've got RNA drops advertised on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Well, you know what you would love by Carolyn? Just knowing that already she's written a lot of books. But you know what book you would start with? You go, okay, it's the bleak stuff, well documented. She has a book that she wrote about 8 years ago. I think it's called Death by Modern Medicine or Death by Just Medicine. But it's a very exhaustive study, very damning, that the number one cause of premature death in North America is the healthcare establishment, basically.
I have a magazine in my hand right now called Uncensored, which is edited by my friend John Eisen. And its leading story is attack of the medical system, now ruled the second leading cause of death, not including accidents, which combined with the current admitted level of death caused by properly prescribed treatments and medication, the medical system is undoubtedly the leading cause of death, and not by a small margin, by a frickin' long shot.
And
the biggest world.
Carolyn's the leading canary in the coal mine. That's right. So she's saying that 8 years ago, and now everyone else is conceding and putting out the same studies. But yeah, so you should start with that, and I'm sure Bob would somehow arrange, or just email him, and you can get a PDF of that, and you will be very impressed, and you'll also like the way she's laid it out into different chapters and covering so many aspects of things that concern you. So it's got a lot of the top-down details and stuff that you're interested in as well.
I have a better idea.
I highly recommend you, and then you'll be like, geez, I was meant to call this show.
I have a better idea.
Yeah.
Of course I was meant to call the show because I was asked to call in. But I have a better idea. How about we just get her on my show so she can explain the content of the book and I try and plug it as often as possible to get more people to buy it so that more people who can actually do something about it will do it. Because I don't know about you, but you know how Jesse Ventura once wrote a book that says, I don't have time to bleed. I'm going to write a book one day that says, I don't have time to read, because I really don't, man. I'm producing so much audio and video content every single day, it almost prohibits my ability to read other than, you know, reading people.
Well, you know what you could do with this book? This book is such a zinger that what you could do is you can get on your radio show and she's divided into content, say about 30 chapters, or I don't know how many, because I don't have the book in front of me. And she adds them, and so, like, if you know a topic's going to come that day involving stuff that you'd have to see her chapter headings, you could just go on air and start reading it, and I guarantee one or two paragraphs, you'd be like, shit, should we keep reading? Yes, keep reading. This is fucking good stuff. So, again, I know you don't read, but I recommend you add that to your archives, look at just the content pages, and then use that as a great source, because you're talking about all the stuff, so you should you could quote from a reference from the sources from the study she did.
Why not just have her on the show so she can quote her own self?
Well, you'd have to ask her.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's going to happen, Vinny.
That's what I'm saying. I'm a favor of the business model of cutting out the middleman. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, I'm not the middleman.
Yeah. But that's not what I'm referring to. What I'm referring to is, why read the book when you can just talk to the author?
If she's available, Vinny, for sure.
Here's what's going to happen, Vinny. You're going to be on a lot of flights from New Zealand going to A, B, C, and you can read a book on the plane.
Well, maybe eventually, until my criminal conviction for selling people marijuana kind of wears off from back when I was 20.
Exactly.
You know?
I wouldn't worry about things like that. You know, that's spent.
Well, yeah, I mean, while I'm being up there, irradiated so close to the upper atmosphere in an airline plot after
you're
having
afraid
my balls tingled by the TSA and what have you.
You haven't got a fear of planes as well.
No, but I have a fantasy about having a body cavity searched on me.
Say again, the last little bit, I missed that.
Did I say fantasy?
Having
a body cavity search done on me by a very, very sexy TSA agent.
Is that right? Often? No.
No, that's reality.
Every night. No. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I hear that slap of the rubber glove, oh yeah.
What's it like for immigration there in New Zealand, Vinny? Is there a lot of, there's this kind of movement of people that are kind of transitioning from different areas? Have you got like an influx of people?
Okay.
I can't think of the geography of where you are.
Let me talk numbers. All right. So let's start with Finland. It's a country that has 500 immigrants that are allowed in every year. It's a country of 14 million people, all right? It's monoculture. It's very similar. Everywhere you go is the same. In New Zealand, we have 4 million people, and we allow in 50,000-plus immigrants a year. So our culture is becoming multicultural very, 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 very quickly. And
I'm slow.
What, New Zealand is? Christchurch is?
Oh, no.
Where are you referring to?
Auckland, not Christchurch. Auckland. Auckland's
okay.
Where all the immigration happens. So of pretty much every single one of those immigrants always comes into Auckland. It's the largest city. It's where all the immigration hubs is. And so what we've got is we've got cultural suburbs now. So then you go to Sandringham, that's where a lot of Indian people live. You go to Otahuhu, that's where a lot of people from Pacific Islands live. If you go to what is it called, Howick, out in East Auckland, that's where a lot of Chinese communities are. If you go,
it sounds like a solution to your not liking to fly problems. You can get sounds like within about a 10-mile radius, you can get every possible cuisine on Earth.
Yeah, and to the north of us, we have a very big South African communities, and we have Americans, British, and Australians, and Irish, and it's really kind of becoming more like a rainbow city. New Zealand's like a test ground in a lot of ways for the New World Order, and apparently one of the ways to conquer a country is to dilute its culture. If you can muddy a culture up enough with enough different cultural influences all simultaneously, if any one issue affects everybody, nobody will actually have the cultural resonance field or the sole command of the language that everybody speaks in order to rise up against whatever's oppressing them. And in so doing, you make everybody a slave by giving everybody their cultural freedoms in every place, everywhere. It's really quite interesting because it gets enforced on you.
Yeah, you should demand they speak English. No, put the signs in English. We're fucking shopping at your place, and you're going to smile and say hello, and everyone's going to be real friendly, and you're going to dig this. We're even going to start picking up some of your women. Try that.
Oh,
that'll undermine the New World Order.
That's
no, I think what I meant. I think what I was trying
maybe
to
not. I'm just being ridiculous.
Was
It's more well, to do with the like, weather and stuff.
I can. I don't get me wrong, brother. I know you're looking. I'm not saying what you're saying is not real. When you come in, and if there is a sense that the culture is now just paving a way for some kind of new thing, where there isn't a sense of having a unified original culture, but I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what to, is that also the intimacy of the electric environment. That it brings us all together and brings people all in, it eliminates borders.
Well, I'm not a fan of eliminating borders, because that way we'd have to have one law for all. And if you've got one law for all, it means if you don't like the law where you're living, you can't go anywhere. You know, like if you don't like communism, you can't go out of China and go somewhere where there isn't hardcore ruthless communism, where you can't even protest lest you get sent to a forced labor camp. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nice to feel his options. Nice to feel his options.
Yeah. I mean, even if you can't access the other countries because you're in a forced labor camp, it's nice to know the grass really is greener on the other side.
Well, what are you going to say about that? Or do you have a guilt that you're born in a... I don't know what to say. It's just weird. It's like, are you taking the weight of, like, the misery of, like, 4 billion people on your shoulders?
Well, you know,
I'm not saying that you could ignore it, but I'm just wondering if it's too huge a load you're sort of expecting to have to carry. I don't know.
No. Well, the thing is, I only have to carry my own line. That's all I have to do. But, you know, I like to, you know, when you lift weights and you kind of, you find that you're really weak at first and you start lifting them, but they start to get easier. And before you know it, you're lifting even more than your own body weight. I'm thinking psychologically and emotionally, a man could, over time, be trained to literally have the weight of the world put on his shoulders. And I'm going to try and find out if that's possible without breaking the man. I want to try and delve into that that kind of real painful reality.
Is your wife into this? Are you going to do Are your fiance into this?
Well, we were talking about race and different cultures coming in, you know. Personally, I don't have a problem with people. I mean, let's say somebody comes into America, it doesn't matter what language they speak or whatever, do they identify as being American? Do they support the Constitution? Do they want to live with freedom, liberty, and justice for all? That's all I want to know.
I would agree that's important. I would think that is important to keep a consensus of those values.
I'm thinking if maybe some of your fire inside you was tied with the fire mountains of New Zealand. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that, Vinny? The flap of a wing of a butterfly kind of creates a, you know, that kind of belief of like when the volcano blows, it's like because everybody is thinking skullduggery, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, there was, thoughts don't necessarily manifest reality a lot of the time. Like, I know that there's plenty of people who got shot who didn't think they were gonna. You know? So thinking is not reality as much as we might like it to. That's why people escape reality using drugs and alcohol, because reality really does suck a lot of the times. However, you can enjoy life to a degree, despite the fact that there is all this skullduggery around you. And if volcanoes and everything and what have you are going off because of people's latent residual psychic feelings or whatever, because let me get this straight. A volcano erupted because a couple of people exposed scumbaggery. Okay? Is that the clear line of logic? Have you got documented evidence? Like, point A over here is somebody exposed scumbaggery, and point Z over here is a volcano erupting. Please, fill in the blanks. I don't see cause and effect.
When is the last time a volcano erupted in New Zealand? Is it 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago? Or?
No, it was like last year. They happen all the time. It's called the Ring of Fire, baby. We've got volcanoes up and down the country going off every now and again. Yeah, it's great. It's fun. And they don't.
Yeah.
It's not really it doesn't really cause too much disasters. I mean, the Christchurch earthquake, which was a heart attack, according to a lot of research has been conducted by investigative journalist Ben Vidgen down there, it's caused a lot more damage than most of the volcanic eruptions since, I think, the 1886 disaster, which killed, like, well over 100 people on a train or something, got washed away by a mudslide, you know. So when you live in the South Pacific and volcanoes are a reality...
It's tattooed on everyone's memory, you know, that 1896 to the... But this was an earthquake that happened, wasn't it? It wasn't a volcanic eruption. And yeah. It's part of the ideology, you know, it seeps into the education system and the whole way of thinking. But that fire inside you is very unique. It's, you've managed to mould it in a way that's attracting, like, the interesting news, you know, real-life stories of people that experienced common things that are united all around the world, but... That actual fire that you have there for your success in your particular area, it seems that maybe some of this is present. If you
can I explain something?
Yeah.
It's far easier to interview somebody about something really bad that happened to them and get the information that you need out of them so that they can tell their story if they believe, truly believe, that you actually care. And are actually listening.
Trust.
And the only way to get that is to actually care and actually listen. And because I have so many diverse people expressing so many diverse ideas, not only just trauma, but also, you know, good, wonderful discoveries and what have you, because I actually listen and I actually care, I get the best out of them and they go away from the show. Usually the conversation after the show ends, after 2 hours, they're like, wow, that was quick. It really is the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. And, you know, that's right. It's because we're having fun. You know, life isn't shouldn't be about all being serious. Sure, serious stuff is going on, but you don't need to let the pain and the trauma of it dominate your life without applying the remedy with the poison. It's the same way fruit delivers fructose into your system without it being broken down like alcohol, like it does with the high fructose corn syrup. It's because every piece of fruit is packaged with fiber, which stops the fructose from being absorbed into your liver, and instead winds up getting digested properly. You see what I'm saying? That's what nature does. It packages the poison with the cure. And I think that's precisely what I like to embody in almost everything that I do, is I like the poison because, oh, it's so tasty, oh, it's so sugary, oh, it stimulates me. But if you ain't got something to heal you from that pain and that trauma delivered at the same time, you wind up accumulating your body and your mind and your soul full of toxic, parasitical crap that just turns you into your own worst enemy.
Yeah, that's important stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
And I think, you know, the Batman movie really encapsulated this quite well, you know, with Harvey Two-Face. You either die the good guy or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I live by that kind of to a large extent because I notice a lot of really really dark tendencies in my character, and I'm really, really watchful of them. You know, like a little bit of narcissism here or there, being a little bit up yourself or a know-it-all there. And I really try and pull myself up on that. And what I encourage other people to do is to pull me up on it as well, because if I'm being so good at manipulating myself into thinking that I can do no wrong, then I think it's a moral duty of those around me to remind me and stop me from doing it.
Mm-hmm. No, you've done well. You've passed the test. It's very, very good.
Well, what's a golden rule back in the day? Treat others the way you want to be treated.
Yeah. And I feel like because a lot of my listeners and my guests are my elders in many ways, my intellectual superiors on many topics, is you have to remain very, very humble and give people the respect they deserve. I mean, if you busted your hump to help people or whatever, and then somebody comes out and accuses you of doing it for yourself, you get really incensed, you get inflamed and what have you. You fly off the handle, you have one of those reptilian brain responses where you said something that you wouldn't have said had you taken 10 breaths first and calmed the frack down before you start lashing out at everybody because you hate yourself so much because you haven't actually had a justification for your existence outside of what you do for a living.
Yeah, no, you everyone's tying in on this reptilian brain now, and then they tie it in with David Icke's kind of stuff, but it's common stuff. It's the thing that's in the education system, the left brain, the right brain. We know that the reactionary, and you have to know these certain things when you're dealing with people. Everyone is taught this now. It's not new information, although it is part of the mainstream curriculum now. And the thing is David Icke was writing about this in the 80s, but he was talking about it in his own coded way. And I know that you mentioned him before. How did you get on with David when you spoke to him?
As well as you can, being, you know, a young man who's, like, from New Zealand going, oh, my God, I'm interviewing David Icke. Isn't that awesome? You know.
Yeah, good content for your show and archives. Right?
Oh,
felt like, yeah, it was like, man, I'm yeah, this is the good stuff.
Yeah, it's like almost as if because I got to interview him, not only do I get access firsthand to talk with this guy who's accomplished so much and has such wonderful ideas in the way that he expresses them, but also it's there online forever so that people can't deny that it took place, and it gives me credibility just having them on the website. And that's really good because there's so much important stuff that gets talked about on my show that ain't just the big boys, you know. I've had so many activists that have...
You have to deal with all the same media effects. You've got to get the things to draw the extra credibility of speaking to these more high-profile people to bring attention to the lower-profile stuff. Is that what you're expressing?
Well, I say that you cover everything, and as a result, everything comes to me.
Yeah, I don't know what Bob thinks of David Icke. What are his basic? Does he have some basic things that he's been saying for how long has he been doing it? 20 years or something? This guy or whatever. It doesn't matter how long. What are the basic thing he says? What are his basic? Can you summarize?
The basic things are: he doesn't like the encroachment of tyranny over freedom, and wants people to be free and clean and healthy and happy.
That's odd. Okay, what's the second thing?
To be spiritually aware. To be spiritually
aware. He was a very successful
those who are.
He wants people to be aware. Is that what he wants people to be aware of his information or patterns that other writers are also laying out that are similar to him, kind of watch out, they're tightening the noose and bringing up the water path.
He talked about being a perpetual student to a degree, that nobody knows it all and you've got to seek out as much information as you can on everything to make up your mind.
That's
let the information guide your thinking process rather than the other way around.
I suppose whether that would impose any form of accuracy or if that just reflects the swath of information and just grime dripping everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's an old saying, even if a story isn't real, it can still be a good story.
True as well. I mean, damn, look at... Absolutely, absolutely. That was point two about being aware or something and opening yourself up to as many sources as possible. Is that to paraphrase kind of what he was saying?
More like to be open, not to reject information because of the previously held to belief, but to look at the information.
So you read UFO magazines and Nazi literature and all that kind of thing even if you don't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you got to study things properly.
So if I see you reading that, I won't think, no, he's into that. No, but that's the problem. So you got to hide. Yeah, but you don't read, so that you won't have that issue.
Yeah, but I've listened to recordings and watched videos of people who deny that the concentration camps have happened, and countless UFO researchers talk to people who claim to have invented free energy devices, people who...
Which, again, I think that Bob mentioned the battery thing. Obviously, he said, well, no, you said he would be killed for it, so he stopped discussing it, which is probably sensible. But, yeah, but again, see, you've come to the right place, but continue.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that all the things you're saying, it's almost like if you're, anyways, you'll love when you research Bob and Connie a little more, just after, like, later on, you'll be amazed how much information and stuff they've already put out. Yeah, you'll have to see, it's just a vast archive, but see why tonight Bob isn't saying anything, or so far. He's maybe coming around soon. I mean, maybe he's getting something to eat, or, you know, a little, like, fresh air, nap, or what? Go ahead.
He might be exhausted from doing all this talk radio.
Well, he's been up for how many hours? About 52 hours? Not only that, I don't know if you've been, you haven't been tuning in. He's been going very, like, energetic. There's been certain ways where he gets a little slowed down a bit and maybe not quite as sharp and, you know, but yeah, no, it's amazing. Even just before he signed off, he was pretty revved up. So, I mean, I'm getting tired, but yeah, no, I'm sure he'll be coming back soon.
Oh, wow.
But continue, my brother.
More power to him. And his product, I've heard so many people who have tried his product, and it really, really, really works.
Sweet.
To the point where they're just, like, totally amazed kind of thing. So, yeah.
Well, you're into that kind of thing, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, for some reason, I have this kind of aversion of purchasing things, you know?
Well, you don't have to. You get the free sample. Yeah, but yeah. I sound like I'm trying to sell you something. And I'm not. But let's put it this way to start. You said you want to be just all your life and blah, 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 and all that stuff. Well, these, you know, that's your choice, you know. And these guys have been just all their life, and Bob's 92, you know. So, I mean, in Plato's Republic, as much as people find it repugnant to the Republic, that's one of the things he says, that justice in the end is, well, no, Bob would disagree, but he's not on the line. But in the book, he expresses that justice is, like, you know, how the universe ultimately is, and in harmony and expressing that, and so ultimately that will win in the end. But what it appears in the shadows and what the skullduggery is that the cheaters will win, and it appears they do, and the psychopaths will get the jobs and they'll wreck it for the other people. But if Bob was here,
name me some evil people that have been assassinated. See, deathly silence. Name me some good
people. Nice, buddy. You can open your radio shows with each one of those. They use that as your opening question to many guests. That's great. I wish Bob was here.
The point is, the exact opposite of karma is true. If you're a good person, you don't hurt nobody, boy, you're going to get a real harsh life. If you're a dick, you fuck over everybody, mate, your life is going to be bitches and roses forever.
Okay? Yes and no. But you know what? Guess what? I know some people that have the latter but didn't, you know, I know people that are really successful and did it just by being smart and not cheating. And they're respected as a result, and they're happy, and their employees like them because they treat them like family, because they know, you know, it's why do it nasty.
Yeah.
But so, you know what I mean? So there's people, what?
Yeah. I know, but we're talking about like a rule of thumb. Just because murder is illegal doesn't mean it doesn't happen, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I sort of do.
And I plan to challenge that paradigm myself, because I'd really like to, have wealth, security, and comfort, whilst at the same time being able to get down to the nitty-gritty and really help people when they're in desperate need of media coverage. I mean, one of the goals of Guerrilla Media, is to give the activists the tools and the skills that they need to go out, and so that they can create their own audience, their own support network, So that not only do they not need help or funding from any big entities or whatever, or any media coverage from anybody to suck up to anybody for something that they want. They have their own power. They have their own machinations. And if we empower individuals who have proved themselves exceptional at what it is that they do, we'd wind up having a much better society, I think, because at the moment we seem to be normal people giving up all of the powers that we have to people who are not exceptional. And if they are exceptional, they're exceptionally bad. And I don't think that's a good idea.
But it also sounds like you feel there's pockets for you to create your own situation and maneuver even within that rubric. If that is rubric, is a description of how you feel the society is structuring itself now.
Do you feel that somebody who works till about 3 a.m. in the morning most days of the week doesn't usually get a day off, is often doing multiple hours of radio per day, giving coverage to people's important ideas and what have you, and spending all of their available time editing and promoting those other people's ideas, which the day before I'd never even been exposed to in the first place, just so that person can get the coverage that they deserve that the mainstream media won't give them. Do you think that person deserves to live in pain, poverty, constant anxiety?
Well, with that kind of working from like 7 in the morning till midnight, you know, every day, you know, if the work's kind of nice, I guess it's not so bad. I mean, if you're in prison in Russia, penal colony, I think that's a hard labor. That's what you have to do, but be more mundane. But, it sounds pretty painful. It sounded like you were describing being in jail or something, except the work was kind of nicer, a little bit nicer. You had to do, like, web work or telephone service stuff or something. It sounds pretty ghetto-y.
We're all pretty much prisoners to our line of work. It just turns out that my line of work is to free people from prisons.
That's wicked, dude. I well, you got stuff to wake up in the morning and do. I'm not saying leave now, but I'm just saying it sounds like you like what you're doing.
You know, to a large extent, it's actually you know, you kind of have thoughts of this man, you know, I can't be bothered doing it today or something like that. You know, you have doubts. And then I look at all of these people that I've had on my show, have a look at all these listeners who send me all these accolades, see all this money people are donating, and I'm just like, you know what? Even if I didn't like doing it, I would still be doing it. Even if I hated it, I would still be doing it, because it just needs to be done. There's nobody else in New Zealand doing this, you know? It desperately, desperately needed to be done. Somebody had to do it, and unfortunately there's nobody else in this country with the power to do it in the way that I am. And so the people with the power, the people with the gift of the gab, the people with the ability to put in those late nights, to embody the entrepreneurial spirit, I think it's a responsibility of theirs to help the community realize its own potential. Because I think Tony Robbins, motivational speaker, right? He had this belief that humanity's suffering from a crisis of faith, but it's not suffering from a crisis of faith in the system. It's not suffering from a crisis of faith in religion. We're suffering from a crisis of faith in ourselves, and that's the worst kind of thing to lose your faith in. If you lose faith in yourself, may God help you. You know. And I try to remind myself every day to have faith in myself, because I've got a number of folders on my desktop here that's full of abuse, trolls and stuff like that, screenshots that I take. So whenever somebody abuses me or is mean to me or does something nasty, I record and document it for later, just in case this person starts trying to come after me in like a gang stalking kind of way. I'll have like a trail of evidence for which to expose their scumbaggery.
But
don't people do that now, eh? Everyone's surveilling everyone. I notice that when people come into my studio, it's like I'm playing them like just maybe some of my own jams, just, you know, we're hanging out. And then suddenly, like, you know, 5 minutes later, they're playing back on their cell phone. It's like, well, what the hell is that? How's it going here? Oh, I just recorded a little bit of it. Oh, really? And other people are doing it too, but they didn't say, hey, can I record some of that? They just like automatically just, you know, that's a whole different thing now too. People are just documenting every square inch of their situation, and like, obviously when they bring the Google glasses in and Google contact lenses or whatever it's going to be, oh my God. I'm not going to complain. I get my flack taken away even by thinking of this. See, I don't want to think about this shit. Bob is right. You know, you get on the drops and, you know, focus on other stuff. And there's so many paths that are productive that you can put channel your intellect and energy and passion into that'll yield amazing results. And then you can still deal with all the negative stuff that I think it's important you're dealing with.
It's about acknowledging that the bad stuff's there, not denying that it exists, though, you know. That's why I call the show The Lighter Side of Genocide, because...
Oh, brother, I love you, man. You're hilarious. You're funny, man. Yeah.
I mean, see, just because I like to look on the lighter side of genocide doesn't mean the genocide didn't ever happen. All right, and you need to be prepared to deal with that kind of nasty stuff if you want to get to the really good stuff. I mean, like Indiana Jones, for example. Do you think he was able to get the golden monkey after walking a nice, beautiful path that had no obstacles, no poison darts, no nothing? Nah, he went through horrible struggles and terrible traps and tricks and giant spiders.
Now, remember with Indiana Jones, though, here's an important thing. Sorry to interject, but here's a really important memory. With Indiana Jones, he was running into Nazis, and here's somebody. Let's do top down. We'll spend the next. Can I just read you the foreword to this book that's written by a guy named Michael Meyer? So he's MM, but he's like a top down version. And this is kind of, he studied a lot of May Brussel too. And this is a book he wrote, and you will love this foreword. Stop me if you. It's not very long. It might sound a little wordy. I don't think I'm too. You'll be pretty blown away just in. Well, let me start. Do you want me to do this? Because this actually relates to genocide as well. Can I go?
Go for your life, son.
Okay, the Kristallnacht, I think that's how it's pronounced, or Kristallnacht, was the name the Nazis gave to the evening of November 9th, 1938, the 15th anniversary of Adolf Hitler's first attempt to overthrow the German government. As in years past, the Nazi Party... bosses gathered to celebrate. Among them was Heinrich Himmler, Heinz Führer of the SS, who had planned an event to mark the anniversary. Following the beer hall celebrations, Himmler's SS set out to assault the Jewish citizenry. Before the evening was over, 119 synagogues were set on fire, 7,500 Jewish shops were looted or destroyed, 171 Jewish homes were burned, and 20,000 Jews were arrested and went to newly constructed labor camps. According to the Nazi records, 36 Jews were murdered that evening. Throughout Germany, Himmler's troops inflicted over 25 million marks worth of damage, 5 million in broken glass alone, hence the name the Kristallnacht. In the weeks that followed, German Jews were not only denied insurance claims, but were totally ousted from the economy and fined 1 billion marks for their abominable crimes. German Jews had suffered persecution before, but only at the hands of roving bands of brown shirts who acted out their personal prejudices under a government that turned a blind eye to their crimes. The Kristallnacht was the first assault to be officially sanctioned by the German government. It was the beginning of the Holocaust. In 6.5 years that followed, over 12 million Jews and other subhumans were exterminated in Nazi death camps. Combined with the casualties of World War II, the death toll is a staggering 60 million. Today, outside Munich... Go ahead, sorry. And I can continue because I'm right.
Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, you want me to continue? No, I know, it's just meaty stuff, isn't it? So I'm sure you've been wanting to interject it. I'll throw a little more. You'll love this. Well, not love it on a... you're interested in this aspect of history. So today, outside Munich, near Dachau, the first and most infamous of the German Nazi death camps, there is a memorial to those who died in the Holocaust. Inscribed on the monument are the foreboding words of American philosopher George, I don't know if I pronounce it, Santayana. Have you heard of him? Anyway, there's a guy named George Santayana, and he says, and you probably heard this quote, quote, those who do not remember the past are condemned to relive it. Okay, now here's so that's going back to that period. The White Knight was the name the Reverend Jim Jones gave to the evening of November 18th, 1978, in which over 900 of his followers died in a mass suicide/murder ritual in Jonestown, Guyana, a community they had carved from the jungles of South America, sparked by their assassination of U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan. The predominantly black American cultists carried out the final performance of the bizarre White Knight they had rehearsed for years. Before the evening was over, 913 former U.S. citizens were dead, most from drinking a cyanide lace concoction. For years, Jim Jones had warned his congregation that the Nazis had infiltrated the Central Intelligence Agency and other departments of the federal government to stage a second Holocaust, this time against the blacks and Native Americans. He claimed their only chance of survival was under his protection in the safe haven of Jonestown. Jones's warnings were correct, but he neglected to tell his congregation that it was he who was helping to perpetuate the coming ethnic war in America. Jonestown was a medical field test in mind control designed to evaluate two suspicious behavior modification drugs on a representative cross-section of black and Native American citizens. The unwitting human guinea pigs were divided into three test groups. 300 received small doses of drug A on a regular basis, 300 received drug B, and the remaining 300 acted as a control group and received no drugs at all. Jim Jones then staged his only definitive test of his control. He asked the followers to commit suicide. Those who did so voluntarily were considered under control. Those who refused were murdered, and the results so noted in the extensive medical records that are still missing to this day. Jones and several of his top aides were in the employ of the Central Intelligence Agency. Actually, his book is called The Jonestown CIA Experiment, and then when you read the book, he goes, it's huger than that, obviously. At the time of the experiment, making the White Knight the first U.S. government-sanctioned persecution of a Native minority in peacetime. The 913 dead are important, but not as important as the yet untold millions. This is his book, so he has a bleak projection. Who will die? And actually, when you think of it, with the AIDS epidemic that came later, which he says claims in his book they developed there, is... the 913 dead are important, but not as important as the yet untold millions who will die if the results of the Jonestown experiment are implemented in society. As the Earth's resources steadily deplete, a second Holocaust becomes more and more probable. See, this is negative stuff, right? But I don't think we shouldn't be reading this on the... We can handle this on Bob's show, right? This is where Bob's sleeping. Well, he doesn't want to hang around for this, but...
I'm not sleeping.
Oh, you're here. Okay, hang on. Let me just finish the last thing, because it ties up with the German one. I'm almost finished. As the Earth's resources steadily deplete, a second Holocaust becomes more and more probable. But, unlike the first, there will be no goose-stepping Nazis, swastikas, concentration camps, or gas ovens. People will just drop dead en masse or be reduced to zombie-like slaves to serve a master race. All that remains of the ultimate experiment that made this grim future possible are photographs of the carnage, and one in particular, surrounded by a field of corpses over the simple, unadorned throne of Jim Jones, hung the following hand-painted wooden sign: those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. That's his prologue to his 570-page book. And there's a lot of neat stuff in it, but yeah. So that's Michael Myers' prologue of his book. Bob, you're here, eh?
Oh, yeah. I've been listening. But
how you doing? Do you? What do you mean that end? What do you mean? Well, you're not going for the Guinness Book of Records?
I'm talking about ending
this whole mode.
The Vinnie Eastwood interview engagement. Unless,
okay, I'm going to go off the phone. Can you engage him for a bit, man? I'd love to hear you chat with Vinny for a bit.
No.
Or, no, you do what you want to do. I'm not going
to. January.
What?
I need to be engaged first.
You need to be engaged?
Yeah, before I get married in January. Come on, engagement.
Yeah, I want to play some recordings. Now, you guys have been going on for a couple of hours, so I think we're good.
Yeah. I've got to go get something to eat myself as well, actually. So
what comes next,
and
Bobby?
Comment on the recordings? I'll start for a little while longer if you want me.
But what did you say about recordings?
You said you wanted to play some recordings, so if you want to comment on them.
You're welcome to stay if you want to hear them.
Okay.
I guess the evergreens.
All right, well, let's roll the first clip. How long is it?
Why did Dave end up reading Michael Myers stuff?
Why? Because his show is called The Lighter Side of Genocide, so I thought he would really be interested in the forward of this thing, because that's a highly on point of that topic, I thought.
Yeah.
And I thought he'd be interested in hearing that expressed, because that book is rare, and but, you know, it's I don't know what to say. You know, it's negative.
I actually do have an important point to raise on that as well. There was somebody in a long, long time ago who saw people burning books of a particular type of knowledge, and he said the person who can bring themselves as a crowd to burn books will most certainly very shortly on thereafter start burning people. And I think it's very prophetic, and I think this is what our problem is that we reject knowledge, and we always use violence, don't we? I mean, I don't want any violence initiated by anybody. I believe in that non-aggression principle. Never, ever, ever initiate attack or violence or aggression on anybody, ever. Why would you do it? You're introducing darkness into a situation that didn't exist in the first place. You're creating it. I mean, this is what we're really powerful as human beings do. We've got the power to create things. We can create wonderful things that heal people and change the world for the better and enlighten and so on and so forth. But we can also manipulate and deceive and destroy everything that people hold dear with the stroke of a pen. Have you noticed? We've got a lot of power. And I think we should probably use that power for good purposes rather than destroying knowledge or rather than destroying people's lives. You know, I think that's pretty straightforward, I think.
We should get Ginny on. She disagrees with all that. She'd take you on hard. No, we're just kidding. It's like, no, she's a really sweet
person. Get Henry Kissinger on.
Just thought, what?
I don't know, Vinny. You know, you don't really know. We need to make sure.
Vinny, you meet Ginny. Vinny, meet Ginny. Yeah. Oh, dear. Now you'd love
it. Yeah. Is Virginia here? Is she not here?
I doubt it. She's probably trying to get some sleep. She was going for about 30 hours, and then she's like,
Can I ask you a question, Dave, before the recording? It's just about, I've heard your story before. I've listened to the archives. And now you're talking to Vinny now about the kind of broadcasting that he's doing. What's your experience of doing this back in the days when you were doing it?
It's a similar thing that he's experienced, except in a different media landscape. You know, I was kind of in the ghetto of the student radio, so it kind of resembled what he, you know, we had. I know because it was in Toronto, it was an okay reach. You could still reach. You could have a sense of a bit of an audience or getting some kind of momentum of response or, you know, but it was similar stuff with the, you know, there's, and it's everywhere, you know, office politics is, you know, the cliche. It's not reserved. It's obviously the media stuff, but, you know, any kind of position of jobs with power and stuff like that, you know, you're going to have to do well in those kind of competitive environments. I don't know if I necessarily did. Well, I don't think I do. That's kind of why
well,
I
you
work
put the hours into it.
So.
You put the early mornings, the late nights into it, and you really give it your all to do it. And
don't you? You're young. You did college radio?
No, I just heard your story with Bob before one of the recordings, and you spoke about how you spent hours doing all this news broadcasting.
Up all night. But I was young, so I could get by on 3 hours sleep without drugs.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. But you're glad to be away from it all now, I guess, and found the... Because you're very successful.
Look what happened to Walter Bode. He made all his amazing books and all that stuff, and, you know, I guess he, you know, married into a situation where, I guess, economically he was safe, I assume. I don't know how that works out. But I think Bob had expressed it. He had said, you know, because he wrote that amazing book, but he said, you know, reporting and exposing certain stuff, you know, he almost risked his family getting killed. And he's like, well, what, you know, if I lose my home and or I get crippled or my kids are killed or my wife is killed or something, what? So people can read this book. And it's like, is that what I'm going to get out of this? You know, so, you know, that, it becomes tough, too, you know. So it's like, you know, there's, I guess, perspective. I mean, Bob said recently that William Irwin Thompson, who's like, you know, one of his dialectics or dichotomies, rather, maybe is the whole, you know, institutions and institutions becoming bureaucracies and corrupt and crushing creativity and newness and blah, 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 and there are all these kind of qualities. I'm a little tired late. Versus some kind of, like, just pure, raw thing where people just be, like, childlike again and express themselves, and it's all natural. And it always just goes to shit real fast because, as Ion says, with humans, it always ends in tears. So that's a kind of, by being indifferent to good and evil, maybe, then the ending in tears, well, you can, I don't know, not let it bother you so much and maybe notice it and avoid it if that's what you want to do.
Well, so what avenue of academia have you been?
Can I say something? I'm sorry to interrupt. I think Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings said it best. There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's sweet. I like, yeah, keep it alive for God. Well, no, maybe it's 50-50. I don't know. It doesn't appear that way. Who knows? Who fucking knows? Maybe it's your upbringing. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know what? But people are different in different situations, too, you know? And people have certain, you know, ideals and all that. Yeah. What was that film? What was the one with the guy? Who was the one in Hawaii? It had the nice Moby song in the soundtrack. Leonardo DiCaprio after Titanic. And remember the one guy they have, like, their little... What?
The beach.
And remember, the one guy gets his leg bitten by the shark, and oh, to help him, bring him back, and then he's moaning in pain, and after like about 2 days, people are like, Jesus, how long are we going to have to put up with this? So like, oh, we'll drag him outside. That's unfair to the majority of people still here. And remember the one French guy's out there, you people are fucking assholes, right? That's Vinny, you know?
Yeah, well, you've got to do the right thing, even if you're the small minority that nobody listens to. I mean...
I agree, buddy. You know what? You're the one guy there when no one else will help someone and they're seriously injured, and then later on everyone would say, that's what I would have done.
Yeah. Everybody else says that, but none of them actually fucking do it. The reality is you've got to tell yourself that you have to be that one. You have to be in the moment.
In the third one, so we get...
Are you recognized for musicology now, David, in the academic sense in Canada? Is that for musicology or is it for...
What's musicology?
Musicology. So you're one-fifth of the whole academic structure of the whole thing now, yeah?
What? I don't get it. What's musicology?
Yeah, but apparently you're in Canada, you were voted some kind of...
No. You know what Bob was referring to? He mentioned that. No. CBC had a thing. And, of course, it'll mutate as time goes on, just like, you know, Pet Sounds wasn't the number one album, you know, on Rolling Stone Top 100s probably till, you know, the 90s or something. But, no, it was the CBC doc that they had done a few years ago. What were the top five albums in Canadian history? And, you know, so the biggies were obviously, you know, whatever, Neil Young, Harvey.
Well, you're recognized in the UK now. I've seen on Twitter. I've seen people talking about your band, like young kids saying, wow, these bands are brilliant. I can't think of your band's name now, but I've
heard probably know the band that I worked with that probably, now it's about ultimately 10 years ago, but that kids might still, in some sense, be rediscovering. It's like, look at this music, because the shift is so such that even stuff that's 10, 12 years old has a really different sense. Actually, it's the wrong sense to say, actually, because a lot of music sounds kind of samey, but... No, maybe I take that.
Play, Would I be able to play one of my songs through the Achieve Radio Network? I've got a... Like, how would I...
Sure, if Bob objects to it, or if it's Bob's show, so you have to ask him, but ask Bob right now. Bob, what are we going to do, like, play it through your speak? What? He wants to play some music sample of what he's doing. Why not? Yeah?
Sure. You can play one.
All right.
Off of the YouTube link, I've just sent it to the Achieve Radio Skype thingy that you contacted me on yesterday.
What?
So you just go ahead and if you just go ahead and play that one for you, that would be great.
Now, who's this? This isn't Derek, right? Now, who's this?
This is Vinny Eastwood.
Sorry, Vinny. Okay, so you've got... Oh, so you make music, too. Oh, so you're going to play a sample of your music. Okay, sorry. Who's the other guy who we're speaking... what's your name? Robert. Okay, Robert.
Robert Bridge, Dave. I've heard all the old... You're great, man. When you and Bob get together and you start nattering away, it's just, again, it's definitely in the top three.
So you're going to play your song. So what, you're emailing it to Bob right now? Is that what you're doing? So that then
I'm just.
Oh, you're going to just hold the phone to the speaker? Is that what we're going to do?
No. I've put it into the Achieve Radio Skype chat thingy. They messaged me, Myth, while I was on hold. So if you there at the Achieve Radio board are with the Skype thing there, if you click on that.
Yeah, but Bob's in Hawaii. I don't know if he can do that. Because they're there.
Oh, I'm getting
but don't
it,
forget
Dave.
Oh, Bill, you're there. Bill! I sound like Carolyn. No, I don't.
So Bill's got it. So Bill's going to play it?
Yeah. It looks like it.
It's going to take me about 90 seconds to get it queued up. So hang on, everybody.
Okay.
Talk about yourselves.
Yeah, I'm going to play this. I'll play a nice little song here.
Oh, we don't need to play a song for...
No, he's going to play a song while your thing's getting set up.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a song while we're waiting for a song to play?
You're a competition, man. Yours better be good, because Bob's going to play some music first. Then yours is going to have to stack up.
Right.
No worries.
With another guy, his arm around her like it used to be with me. Ooh, it makes me want to die. Yeah. Well, here it comes. Here comes the night. Here comes the night. Ooh. How they look so good together. Wonder what is wrong with me. Why can I accept the fact she's chosen him and simply let them be? Whoa, well here it comes. Here comes the night. And now he's holding her the way I used to do. I see her closing her eyes and telling them lies, exactly like she told me to. Yeah.
the way Dave sings. Dave could sing that song.
Yeah. Well, when I was younger, or now I can still sing like that. If I was
right.
In the booth,
so now
or my throat would hurt.
Now we're going
broken
to have
social
Vinny's
scene,
song.
That's it.
We're going to have Vinny's song now?
Scene.
Yeah.
Here it is. Quiet, Rob.
Sounds kind of low. Can anybody else actually hear this?
We'll bring it up a bit if you can.
Yeah, we can hear it.
Encapsulates you with love as all the cares away are gone. Breaking in with the show.
Activist theater group. You can go out and combine music part, and they had a lot of energy in that too. Use a lot of minor chords. You made it pop. You just say, what are the major chord substitutions? So it'll be ironic that it sort of sounds a bit sad, like a birthday song, but it's also a bit of a drunken wake or something.
Is that?
I liked it, man.
Is that Vinny singing?
Yeah.
Yeah, very different voice. Well, no, not different voice. I can see you singing that way, but you see, you got the tender, syrupy side. It's like a contrast to all the apocalyptic kind of landscape, too, that you're navigating through.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, package the poison with the cure.
And hey, imagine you put that through Marshall Amps, brother, and you could have a great punk band because it's, you know, it's... You think about it, you can just imagine that when you're just playing that whole song, if that was cranked up really loud and those, you know, A minor chords or whatever you're playing were going through a Marshall amp, suddenly like that, you know, it could be very powerful, you know, a live sort of punk thing, even at a slower speed, you know. Yeah, I liked it. It has potential, you know, own it down a little bit. I didn't hear all the lyrics completely, but I assume they're, yeah, all important and amazing. Yeah.
Well, you can.
You're a talented dude.
Why is this track called Cause Time? What's the real title of it? It's Cause Time.
No, it's called Happy Birthday.
No, it's Dave. Dave.
Hmm.
Helen.
Say again.
What's this song, Cause Equals Time? What's the real title of the song?
Oh, you're talking about the Broken Social Scene tune?
Yeah, it's a cork.
Oh, Cause Equals Time that Bob sometimes plays. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. If you could play any track now of Broken Social Scene, what would it be?
Huh. Ooh. Well, I don't, you know, here I don't have the CDs. They're in the other building. I don't have stuff in here. Oh, but just theoretically? Oh, not start playing. Damn, I don't know. There's like about 40 tunes. I wouldn't know what to pick. It's a mood-based thing. I would play, if I was introducing for Virgin, which actually would be weird because it's one of the few songs where it's not Kevin singing, I would actually play him the Stars and Sun song because it's just so groovy, I think, and the video's really cute for it. So I'd say, yeah, check that one out first. It's really colorful, and you'll see artsy but kind of poppy and, you know, definitely had a good resonance in the 2001 with people kind of thing, too. It sounded fresh at the time, even though, I mean, how fresh is music? It's an amalgamation of all the cool stuff that came before it, ultimately. But, yeah, you'd like that one. I'd say start with that. Or if you want an instrumental for your activist TV show, well, no one would know the difference. You feel free to play on that album, too. There's a thing called Pacific Theme. If you want to get like a more of a chilling West Coast California, you know, Johnny Carson vibe when you hit like really hard about people being tortured in Syria or something like that, you know, feel free.
Well, this brings an important scheme that I'm about to put into action at American Freedom Radio. My time zones change, like from winter to summer, so that during the summer in New Zealand we're broadcasting from midday till 2 p.m., but it never changes in the Northern Hemisphere, even though they're going into winter. So I thought, what a really good idea would be to replace all of my intro and outro songs with really summery type, you know, music,
right,
and what have you.
Yes.
So that all the people in the Northern Hemisphere are freezing their asses off, get reminded that it's summer somewhere,
yeah,
and all the people that are actually enjoying summer in New Zealand can really, really enjoy it every time they listen to the show as well.
That's right, you play Christmas music on June 21st.
Yeah. I love irony.
How come How come I've heard your song before, Vinny? Have you, has it been broadcast on the radio quite a lot or something?
I think I've broadcasted it twice before on radio.
Okay, is it on YouTube or something? Maybe it pops up on YouTube. Okay, I've heard it before. Yeah, it's good.
Oh, there's a whole album there, and people can download all of the tracks for free. They're on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Have a listen if you like it, and you want to support us making even even more music. Donate. It's the same principle that I do everything by. I just give people what they what I hope that they would like for free, and just hope that they give something back if they want, if they like it.
And when they don't, you're cool with that too, eh? Cause that's
yeah,
gonna
because
happen, obviously.
Making...
I mean, think about it, how many people send money for, you know, when you look on SoundCloud, how many people, after they listen to it as many times as they want, say, oh, I'm gonna download that and pay money. Not many, when I look at the stats. What's that?
As long as, it doesn't really matter. As long as some money's coming in.
Yeah. But, Bob, can you pipe in here? Are you ready to pipe in? I love talking with you guys. I'm going to sign off on the thing just because I want to get in a bit of the mode of listening just on the speaks, because I've been on the phone, I've been on a lot today. So I'm going to get off now, but I've been enjoying speaking with you, Vinny, and you as well, Rob, and I'm sure I'll see your website and check out what you're doing, and all the best with your stuff, and yeah, look into Carolyn's stuff and Bob's stuff.
So
all right.
You're leaving, or you're just going to be passive and listen?
I'm going to be passive and listen, and I'm going to maybe go downstairs and make some tea and see if there's anything
right.
in the fridge and that kind
right.
of thing. But, you know, I'm going to still hang around. But I really enjoyed that. Again, yeah, Vinny, lovely chatting with you, man, and best of luck with everything.
Yeah, listen to this. Carolyn, I got an email from Tariq in Los Angeles. He says, an ion portal activation. He says, how's that marathon going? Greetings to that doctor of the future who is truly a genius wizard. My RNA was lifted by the popos, that's the police, when they took my Volvo wagon. Got an S40 Volvo now. Miss you guys. So I responded right away. He sent that. And I said, hey, I said, we're doing great. And call in, Tariq. And I gave him the phone number. So we'll see if he calls in. I just happened to catch his email as it came in. So what we'll do is I'm going to play some recordings after the top of the hour. So I could play some music right now, Dave.
Sure.
Well, I'll fare you all well. Also, because I'm getting reasonably late here, and I'm kind of hungry, and I've got like.
Are you getting
two
peckish? You don't say that in New Zealand, do you?
we do say peckish. We're all fans of chicken.
What's the connection between peckish and fans of chicken? Are they fans of chicken? What's that?
How do chickens eat stuff?
How do chickens eat stuff? I don't know. You tell me. Is there stuff? I'm not a farmer. Do they kind of bring in their beak if it's already broken down and bring it back and swallow it? What's going on? Am I like out of it? I'm tired. What am I missing?
What did you say, Carol?
How do chickens eat? They peck. Hence, being peckish.
Okay, sorry, I wrecked your joke, brother. My wit's gone for a second. Sorry, man. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Sorry.
That's good.
I think my joke wrecked myself.
What's that?
I think my joke, like many of my jokes, just wrecked myself.
Well, you know, you don't need jokes. You're more interesting without having to tell jokes anyways.
Oh, I desperately need jokes, though. Desperately.
No, I need jokes desperately. He's wrong. I like it. All right, brother. You guys, I'll see you guys soon. All right. Oh, look, someone says, I'm looking at the chart thing, and Norma just said right now, Dave, send Vinny to howionic.com. So that's the recommendation.
That's an option.
I appreciate a good irony.
How ironic. Oh, nice to meet you, Vinny.
Thanks, everybody. And make sure you send me Bob and Carolyn's Skype details. I'll schedule a slot for you guys to come on the show pretty soon, eh?
Awesome. You won't want us on. We don't agree with you at all. We wouldn't be popular in your audience. I don't think so.
But the thing is, I like to do the opposite of what most radio show hosts do. I like to bring on people that I disagree with and find ways of agreeing with them in a nice, friendly atmosphere where we can have fun and you can express your ideas and won't be challenged.
No, I don't have any ideas. I don't speak English. I don't engage in intellectual discussions. I don't think
okay.
I'd be a very good guest.
It's just too late.
What? I'll come on and play some music.
Every major academic person, they know Bob Dobbs, but they won't say anything that he's part of the curriculum. But when I was in Paris, Bob, you know, when I went to see Paul Lafferty, the Canadian artist?
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned there was a young boy there who basically he was part of the curriculum for creating the academic music curriculum. And I said, oh, you must know Bob Dobbs. And, you know, everybody knows Bob. I just think of the Fordham University and stuff. And I went, they went, no. And I mentioned Dave Newfield. And he goes, I've heard of him. I know him. So that's interesting to where you are to this. Is it this year? When did that Canadian connection come through, Dave?
When did the Canadian connection come through?
Yeah, the announcement that was.
Right. I mentioned that had come up. Yeah, no, Bob had mentioned. No, what it was they had a thing, and like I say, it does mutate. But this is like about 4 years ago, where they have a documentary, and they said the top 5 albums, or I guess modern albums in Canadian history, and number 5 was Broken Social Scene, You Forgotten People. So, but. That's their opinion at the time. But, yeah, so people thought it had cultural significance. So, but what you're suggesting is people still now or whatever, people that are younger still hear it for the first time and think, oh, this is some neat stuff.
That's probably why you recognized your name. That's when I was in Paris 4 or 5 years ago, so it was good. Do you know Paul? Because he's Canadian, isn't he?
Paul who?
Lafferty, he's a painter, an artist Bob shared. Yeah, he shared it on 5 Bodies.
Yeah, Paul channeled Tesla.
Okay, guys, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
You're off?
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, me too. I don't want. Let me go off before you do, because I'm not the guest. Okay, I'm gone. Ciao.
And then I'm gone.